हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 2, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here, page 58, Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam has listed the avatars, the plenary expansions of the Purusha, and Lord Krishna appears among them. But the Bhagavatam further explains Lord Krishna's specific position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since Lord Krishna is the original Personality of Godhead, reason and argument established that his position is always supreme. Had Krishna been in a plenary expansion of Narayana, the original verse would have been differently composed. Indeed, its order would have been reversed, but there cannot be mistakes, illusions, cheating, or imperfect perception in the words of liberated sages. Therefore, there is no mistake in the statement that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Sanskrit statements of Srimad Bhagavatam are all transcendental sounds. Srila Vyasadeva revealed these statements and after perfect realization, and therefore they are perfect. For liberated sages like Vyasadeva never commit errors in their rhetorical arrangements. Unless one accepts this fact, there is no use in trying to attain help from the revealed scriptures. Why would you approach the revealed scriptures if we don't believe that the great personalities that are involved in them aren't perfect? Right? Otherwise, then why approach them if it's a matter of, oh, maybe this, maybe not, like this, or I don't understand, so it doesn't make sense, so it's not important, or these kind of things. We wouldn't do that. Why go to the scriptures if that's the attitude? Right? That's the whole point, is that at the very beginning, we're establishing that it's coming from Shabda knowledge, and then from that, then that's going to be the those who are qualified, and then those who are liberated. Then we see then those who have hearts God realized. Right? And then from that then we are dealing. That's why the whole attempt is being made to establish the trance of Vyasadeva, because that's how we'll interpret it. Right? Srimad Bhagavatam's written, and all the Vaishnava Sampradayas will accept it. But how they're going to approach it, what will be the philosophical arrangements that they'll make, that will be different. So then, if you want to get the full advantage of the Bhagavatam, then you must see it from the perspective that Vyasadeva himself saw it. And from that, how, therefore, he composed it. Does that make sense? Because in it, the hermeneutics is what defines the philosophy. So in general, yes, it's Vyasadeva. So then, he's the sixth school. So then, but then you have within that, within the Vedanta, you have six different ways that you can interpret it on the finer points. And so therefore, then we want to use this Vyasa's own realization, which will be what the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are accepting. Yes?
We didn't speak about his trance previously. It's never mentioned.
Because it's being brought out here is that you're establishing that this is how you're going to view the Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam is the authority. And so then, because of that, then the Sandarbha is giving all the complete philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then you need to establish what will be the angle in which you're going to view it. And so having established that, then everything's going on. Does that make sense? So we see that even though we may not have noticed it before, but when the Acharya is pointing out, now we see here, Prabhupada's pointing, it's everybody's pointing it out. It's one of those. you don't, when it, yeah. So when Krishna allows you to see, then you see. So, but now by Krishna's grace, it's being seen. Does that make sense? So he's pointing out it's because of the order in which it's presented, then by grammar, Krishna has to be the supreme. Right? It means you have all these incarnations, and then Narayan, and then Krishna. Otherwise, in Sanskrit grammar, it would have to be reversed. But it's not. So therefore, this is how it's presented.
Yes. Just mentioning that we should, to understand the scripture, we should accept that the acharyas are perfect.
Yes.
And then some people, they argue that they are perfect in the spiritual sense, but they are not perfect to comment day-to-day life. Some people, they have this argument, or sociology, or science, or whatever.
And who are these people? What's their qualification?
Some people are even gurus.
But what's their qualification? Just because you're a guru, Anandamoy Ma is also a guru. Right? Ravi Shankar is a guru.
ISKCON gurus.
Yeah. So the whole point is that's like saying, yeah, great, he knows quantum physics and all that, but, you know, he won't understand third grade math. That's the level of intelligence we're working with here on this point. We're not commenting on other points. We're just commenting on this, is that if you know, it's like saying, oh, he understands himself and the form, but the form in the mirror he can't understand. The question is that I haven't heard this for a long time. So the difficulty is this question, when I last heard it, would have been back in the 90s. And so back in the 90s, when we would deal with these things, we'd be a bit more vociferous than more lately, where we're trying to be more pleasant. So the idea is that Srila Prabhupada and the acharyas and all that, they're from the spiritual world, so they know all that stuff. But here in the material world, you know, we're the guys. We're the man, you know. We're the guys that walk around, you know, with the wheelbarrow for our genitals, because we're just so qualified, you know, and like that. And so therefore, you know, what do they know about the material world? As if we knew anything about the material world before we met Prabhupada. Right? If they were so successful, why weren't they doing all that? Why weren't they there, and why aren't they giving their... So the point is the conditioned soul is in ignorance. He can't know what is reality. We're not talking about the mode of ignorance here. We're talking about the Ajnana Shakti that is covering the living entity. And that is there because he thinks I'm the controller and the enjoyer. So he cannot actually understand things as it is. And he has, you know, like this. He has flaws. So, therefore, those from the spiritual world aren't under this. So the material world is easy. Right? Because it's just a perverted reflection of what is in the spiritual world. That's the real thing. And this is just a perversion of that. It's being taken as if it's a different place. You know, it's like that you have that area of town where the policemen don't go, but as long as anyone in that area doesn't come out, they don't care. You know, and it's kind of like, in here, we're the masters. And so that's what we're talking about. This is a criminal mentality. It's not a mentality based on reality. So to say they can't comment on what's going on here, based on what? And then if we're going to say this, How are we so expert at the material world? We understand the primary and secondary creation. We understand the metaphysics of how everything works. Like that. And so then, but otherwise, then who is the authority? You know?
You said the academics.
The academics. And since when are they an authority?
Yeah.
And so, who in the academics is an authority in the Gaudiya Vaishnav Siddhanta?
Yes.
Like that. You know, what was the name? In Philadelphia, our academic there. Rabindra Swarup. He was saying that in Boston, that some of the academics there, they're sitting down at the pub drinking beer and discussing some technical points on the Sandarbhas. How are they in any way? Because even you say the academics are the authorities, are they accepted like that in the world? Does the business community accept that it's the academics that know what's going on? If they are, why are they getting $5,000 a month while they're making $500 million a month?
Yes.
What's so great about it? The guy who teaches the MBA course gets less money than the guy that goes out and gets the job after the course. Now, is that foolish or is that foolish? I mean, if we want to be fair, maybe we could say it's foolish, but, that's the whole thing, is that since when? Does the government say that they're the ones? They know how to run things? How well... here we have an intellectual here, Karl Marx. How well did his thought pattern work? It doesn't work. It does not function.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So this whole idea is that because they sit around and speculate, but that's the whole point. That's why we hear that if you speculate, you cannot understand Krishna. So if they're taking the academics as authority, that means they will never understand Krishna. And to say that's like saying that them as academics, they can't understand, what's going on in grade school and nursery school. It's that foolish. Why don't they understand? It's like when Prabhupada was walking in the harbor in Boston, he asked the devotees, "What is this?" Devotees are going through all kinds of things, this, that, so many things like that, and they couldn't figure out. So, probably at the end said it's sex life. all those big ships and this and that. They're all going, sex life? That's weird. He says, there's a guy running all this so he can make the money so he can have sex. Because unless he's a big guy with lots of money, then what lady is going to be impressed with him? Like that. Or the other one, they're walking along and there's a tree, right? And underneath there's a pile of bird stool. The Prabhupada's going, what does this mean? And they're going on all kinds of things like that. Prabhupada said, no, it means attachment. So he can so clearly see what's going on. Anybody who's worked with him personally can see that. So then, how can they even say? Do they, they're so expert they've been with Prabhupada in that? I've never heard anyone who's spent personal time with Prabhupada ever say that.
Yes.
So that's now two counts against them. So it's just, you can't do that. They know, that's perspective. Otherwise, then why would we take them? What have they done in the material world? If the material world is that's the threat, what have they done? What academic? And that means most academics you can't take. So which ones? So let's have a list of, who is the... We can give a list of who's authorized. Exact names. But they can give how the material world works, how it functions, what's the reality. Right? When every few months they change, or few years, they change their philosophy. So how can they be taken as authorities? Yes.
Also, we see that every time when the particular acharya was there, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur or Jiva Goswami, during their time, language, the grammar, and astrology is the topic, and they were the scholars of.
Yeah, that's also the point, is even if you want to take it from that, they were the scholars among scholars. Even among scholars, they went out and discussed. And they weren't just sitting around. They weren't armchair speculators, as Prabhupada points out in modern academics. They actually, they were doing, Baladev Vidyabhushan, he actually went and discussed with all the scholars of the other sampradayas. Jiva Goswami discussed with all those people. Rupa Goswami was accepted by Akbar and Hill, his scholar. So those were the scholars. So then we're going to say it's only Western, first world Western academic scholars. Now, is the next thing we're going to say is they have to be white? Right? They have to be white, they have to be male. Where are they going to take this discussion? Because these were the scholars of the day. when Europe, they were running around, you know, chasing wild boars for dinner. You know, in India, they were discussing Sanskrit. And so now we're going to take it, these modern academics know what they're doing? Suddenly? Out of where? Who's decided their authority? Each other. You know? So it's a mafia, that's all. Okay. Before, people didn't accept them. Then they start thinking, and then they get established, and now no one except them has the authority. It's a mafia. Well, this is an eternal principle. It comes down from the Lord. It descends. Well, this knowledge that they're dealing with is ascending, so it can never get past the aparoksha level on the misguided. It can't even get above that. So the highest consciousness that they'll be able to get, basically, is they'll always be in pranamoy. And maybe they might get into manamoy, but they won't get past that. Because they don't know the soul. They don't know we're not the body. What branch of knowledge? Prabhupada talks about that. The academic. What branch of knowledge is there? It's not there. It's lacking. Right? So they're saying they know the material energies. How do they know the material energy? They're just guessing. They're looking at it. I was talking with one doctor. He was telling me how medical research goes on. You know, he's a full-on doctor. He says, they sit there, they have a disease, right? Whatever it is they're looking at, and they go, well, let's try this. And nothing happens. Well, let's try this. And they do that for thousands of times, and then it reacts to something. Oh, my grandmother's borscht. Okay, so what's that? So now what about that? Was it the beets? Was it the carrots? Was it that it was sitting in my refrigerator for 2 weeks, so therefore it went sour? You know, what is it? And then they go after that. That's why it takes millions and millions of dollars to research these things, because that's all they're doing, is sitting there and go, well, let's try this. You know? They may be using their intelligence, but the point is it's purely speculative.
Yes.
Well, the Ayurveda, they can look at things and decide what things are there, what's the nature of a plant, what you can actually do. Even if it's a plant, they don't know. They have tests. Right? You're from one area, you get another plant, you don't know. You have ways to test it to tell what medicine it's useful for. Like this. You know, so what are they talking about? Yes?
Among them, the one who finds out what is the essential ingredient, he's a pharmacist, either a biotechnologist or, you know, the other one. But one who designs a drug, he's a chemist. He's different.
Okay.
And the one who's actually giving the medicine is a doctor. He doesn't have any idea what is in it. He just only knows that it is effective. Three people.
Yeah. And then, all of those work for who? The businessman without a degree. Yeah. You know? And by lobbying, then he's lobbied to some other guy who's a lawyer, and he's running, you know, in the government, and then therefore he gets his stuff approved. Yeah, so, yeah, that's the fun part. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, just as a general principle, no one bring this one up again. I mean, this is so 1990s, this one. It's like, you know. Sorry? Yeah, a list of things not to bring up. Yeah. Like that. Okay. We're good? Everyone awake now? Okay. Brahma refers to false knowledge or mistakes, such as accepting a rope as a snake or an oyster shell as gold. Pramada refers to inattention or misunderstanding of reality. And vipralipsa is the cheating propensity. Karana pattava refers to imperfectness of material senses. There are many examples of such imperfection. The eyes cannot see that which is very distant or very small. One cannot even see one's own eyelid, which is the closest thing to his eye. And if one is disturbed by a disease like jaundice, he sees everything to be yellow. Similarly, the ears cannot hear distant sounds. Since the personality of Godhead and his plenary portions and self-realized devotees are all transcendentally situated, they cannot be misled by such deficiencies. Okay. So then, back to verses 87 to 89. You say something contradictory and become angry when this is pointed out. Your explanation has the defect of a misplaced predicate. This is an unconsidered adjustment. Only the personality of Godhead, the source of all other divinities, is eligible to be designated Swayam Bhagavan, or the primeval Lord. When from one candle many others are lit, I consider that one the original. Right here, you say something contradictory and become angry when it is pointed out. That's like the academy in a nutshell. Like that, yeah. Srila Prabhupada. The Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, verse 46, states that the Vishnu Tattva, or principle of the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is like a lamp because the expansions equal their origin in all respects. A burning lamp can light innumerable other lamps, and although they will not be inferior, still the lamp from which the others are lit must be considered the original. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead expands himself into plenary forms of the Vishnu Tattva, and although they are equally powerful, the originally powerful personality of Godhead is considered the source. So even if they want to say, okay, these personalities can't understand the material world because they're from the spiritual world, are they going to say this about Krishna? Krishna's creating everything. He's in the heart. He's in between every atom. He is every atom. He's why anything functions. He's the life airs. He's the sense, power of the senses, power of the intelligence, power of the memory, all these things. And so in Gita, he's speaking himself. In 11th canto, he's speaking himself. You know, in 3rd canto, he's speaking himself. So, and they're what they're talking about is how the material world functions, the mentalities, and what's reality. So now they're going to extend this to him? Are they going to be so bold? Right. Who would dare? Yes?
I was thinking it's purely Christian idea, because that's what they did to their God. They say he created spiritual and material world, but then he lost control, so he's not...
Yes,
so
yes.
That's where it's...
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
I mean,
yeah, because the modern academy is based on the Christian kind of perspective.
Yeah.
Like that. It means even if you're not from that background, you still have to toe the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah, it has to come from that. Because otherwise, then why would it be there? Because I even think in Gita, Krishna says that he's not in control, there's no God, there's no all these things like that. So it's an atheistic principle.
16th, divine and demoniac.
Divine and demoniac, like that. So these are just mundane things. So the point is that a devotee may get distracted by these, as long as everything else is solid in their practice. If they kind of are not dealing with this much, it doesn't come up that it becomes, you know, very big. Then by association with devotees and by the devotional process that they're doing, hearing and chanting, then the heart will become purified, these things will go away.
Yes.
Right? But one has to be very careful not to make these prominent. Right? Otherwise one will get distracted.
I would say that even nowadays there in Brazil that is almost all leaders they accept that. That comes from the Krishna Vasta.
Yeah, but it they has to come from
that.
There because if because the thing is their paradigm is based on we are the body, we are Westerners. Even though if they're in Brazil, that's kind of a bit of a stretch. They're not Westerners.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They're not Westerners. They're farther east than America, right? Yes. The Andes are farther east than the east coast of North America.
Yes.
You know? So they can't really say they're Westerners. Like that. Or if they're taking that Europeans, then that's Westerners. Then from that angle, then they can get in. But then they should use that. They shouldn't use the Southern California kind of approach. So now, if they're Westerners, so that means then their identity is that, then where's the identity of the soul? So where are we even talking about a spiritual movement here? Then, because we have to remember, the Greeks were, you know, they were speculative, they were thoughtful, but they were not devotional. They didn't know the Lord. So to make one's basis on that principle, then we'll be weak as far as Vaishnavism goes. So then if you put that as they don't know the Westerners, they don't know the Western environment, therefore, you know, they wouldn't be able to function here. Even though, basically, as we speak, Asians from India and farther east are going to the West and outclassing the Westerners, you know, easily. Does that make sense? You know, in proportion that they go there, and that it's way more. Okay. Even if they say, oh, they're just driving a taxi, there's probably making way more money than the local American who's driving a taxi. You know? So that whole premise that, so we're doing this because we can't do that, because that's for people in that part of the world, and we're different, we know our scene in that, that is just what he's talking about. Brahma refers to false knowledge or mistakes. Pramada refers to inattention or misunderstanding of reality. Vipralipsa is cheating propensity. So this is all these kind of things. So the pride is so great that they think that this attachment for their cargo shorts and flip-flops and t-shirts is so great that they're willing to bend the philosophy, change the philosophy, say that the acharyas don't know what they're talking about just so that they can feel comfortable and feel that they're being spiritual. You know, but I mean, you can go to Bombay and there's plenty of people there wearing all kinds of Western clothes and being cool and all this and that. And then, you know, and dabbling in their, you know, Hindu roots and all that here and there. So what's the difference? Other than the Bombay guys will look more cool. You know? So it's a very dangerous position. So if they want to act in this way, they can. But then there's going back to Godhead. That's a different discussion. If you want to do that, then you have to follow the acharyas. Because the whole point is okay, they're the authorities for being in the material world, but they're not the authorities for going back to Godhead. The acharyas are telling how to go back to Godhead, how to connect what you're doing in the material world to going back to Godhead. The acharyas aren't telling us how to drive a car. Right? Like that. So what they're telling us is how to connect our position to Krishna. So they may feel very, very proud of their authority and knowing their position, but they by the same argument that they're doing, they have zero understanding of how to connect to the spiritual world. And if they're saying, no, but we've been practicing spiritual life, so we know, okay, great. So that means only we can understand that way, but those coming from the spiritual world can't understand what's here? You know, so then how is any of this logical? Does that make sense? But it's like you said, it's coming from this Christian doctrine. Christianity would come in because they were monotheistic. So in that monotheism, which is good, it means they were working at a higher consciousness, you could say, than the pagans. And so then, but the problem is because they weren't very mature, they had the faith, but not so mature, then the difficulty comes up is that in the beginning, they would just do their thing because they have that, they have a higher understanding. And so then they keep to themselves. And those who appreciate what they're doing, they can take part. And those who don't, they don't bother them. They live their life and the others live theirs. But at some point, it was decided that, okay, this philosophy is quite good. It's monotheistic. And so we want to spread it, which is also a good thing. But to do that, then they decided we have to get rid of the old culture. Problem with getting rid of culture is the manifestation of your philosophy. So therefore, how everything connects to the Lord, and whatever level you're on, that's your culture. So when you get rid of the old culture, then all that you're left with is the pagan culture. In other words, you get rid of the culture that is based on monotheism. And then then you have to function, because you're attached to the modern culture, you have to deal with the pagan culture. And then the problem is it also, like the old culture, then is pervaded with their philosophy. But it's pagan. So instead of being mature enough to go into it and be able to remove what is those aspects that are unnecessary, and or to bring them forward to a supreme, because they have an idea of a supreme, now all you have to do is replace with someone higher. You know, because the same thing in the old culture, they were doing their animal sacrifices. This, and these pagans are doing the same thing, but now you just do it to the one god and feel like this. So they don't understand this. So then they also throw out the whole pagan culture, except for basics like, you know, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So you have this very high, you know, it means a higher philosophy with no culture. And then they have to create their culture. As you say, oh, well, we're following Christian culture, European. What is that culture? Right? So it's just whatever the locals do. And somehow or another, because you're Christian and you're doing whatever the locals do, but someone else is not, and they're doing what the locals do, your local is better than their local? Yeah, I thought it was the philosophy. So then in this, then it's the same principle, as Prabhu pointed out, is that the only way they can establish their position is by getting rid of a culture, and especially the old ones. Right? Because history, you have the history of the place pre-Christian, and we always see as pre-Christian, they're always quite advanced, these cultures. But post-Christianity, then they're, you know, in the third world position as European Christians want them to be. Right? Because then if they're in that position, then you can take all their wealth. Right? So it's just a business position. You get authority, you get your position, you get whatever you need. So it has nothing to do with the philosophy.
Yes.
Right? Right, because otherwise we see is according to their acharya, you're supposed to, the Good Samaritan, all these things you're supposed to share, you're supposed to do, you know. He took, you know, one loaf of bread and distributed to so many people. They take whatever everybody else has got and bring it back to one person. You know, so they kind of got it a little bit backwards. So this whole thing of that we know and the acharyas can't know or don't know, this is like, you know, this fits into the category of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura's point of one of the most amazing things is how somebody so small can think they're so great. Okay. So that makes sense? So we have nothing, there's nothing good we can say about this. It's just lost stock and barrel has to be dropped. And even if you have these doubts, that's fine, and you want to check and you don't believe, that's great, but you're not supposed to take initiation. You're supposed to do all this before. And if you do all this after, then that's not the system. You can say, oh, but we do it in the material world, great, but you'll stay in the material world. To get to the spiritual world, you have to do as the acharyas say. And the whole point is if you're saying, oh, they don't know what they're doing, then why is it that they have... It means they're coming down regularly. It's just like this. Let us say, take Srila Prabhupada. In the pastimes, we see Lord Chaitanya is in his pastime. He finishes one moment here. That moment's then happening in the next universe, in the next universe, in the next universe. Right? So even, you know, we're talking, you know, in these moments, because moments is what we can perceive. Right? So that means there'll be, what is it, like... almost like almost, you know, 600, 700 moments in a minute. So that means this 1 minute is stretched out through 600 universes. Right? And so then these acharyas, these pastimes are going on. They're in all these universes and they're not going to figure it out. You're in one universe at one time in ignorance, and they're in without ignorance, and they're going through thousands, tens, hundreds, millions of universes in one display of a pastime, and they're not going to learn? So, I mean, what kind of intelligence are we dealing with here? like that. And if that's academic intelligence, then we would have to doubt whether you can actually use academic and intelligence in the same sentence. Like that. Does that make sense? So these are things that are totally destructive to spiritual life. If you're interested in spiritual life, you don't go to this place. And if you take it that this is the basis of your position, then one could say by the acharyas you don't have a spiritual life. So yes, okay, you're the expert on the material platform, but you'll stay in the material platform. And if nothing else, if well, that's your opinion and all that, then we'll refer to what Srila Prabhupada mentioned to the professor in Moscow.
Katovsky.
That, okay, at the time of death, we'll see who's right. Are you right or am I right? So, yeah. That's right.
Krishna in 11th canto, while explaining Varnasrama, he tells Shloka, one should not, one should know the Acharya as myself and never disrespect him any way.
Yes.
One should not envy him, thinking him an ordinary man.
Ah.
He is the representative of all the demigods.
Yes.
This verse is profound.
Yes. So here we have some shots that Krishna is saying. So if they accept Krishna, then they'll have to accept it. And if Krishna's in the same boat, he made the material world, and like the Krishna's say, he's lost control and all that, and now the devil runs it, then, you know, hey. Better go.
The Acharya is the spiritual, transcendental professor of spiritual science.
Yes, yes. And it's the higher science, so they naturally do the lower science. Yeah. This example also explains the appearance of qualitative incarnations like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, Sambhos tu tamo dishtan adpat kad jala maya shukshma dipa siksha staniyasya na tata samyam. The Shambhu Tattva, or the principle of Lord Shiva, is like a lamp covered with carbon because of his being in charge of the mode of ignorance. The illumination from such a lamp is very minute. Therefore, the power of Lord Shiva cannot compare to that of the Vishnu principle. Right? And that's Shiva. Right? So how much more soot are we dealing with as we come down to the lower levels? Text 90. Krishna, in the same way, is the cause of all causes and all incarnations. Please hear another verse. Please hear another verse to defeat all misinterpretations. What am I doing? Here in Srimad Bhagavatam, please hear another verse to defeat all misinterpretation. 91 to 92. Here in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10 subjects are described. 1. The creation of the ingredients of the cosmos, Sarga. 2. The creations of Brahma, Visarga. 3. The maintenance of the creation, Stanam. Right? So what's special is Stanam, that you're maintaining it only Krishna can maintain, because you can only maintain it if you can provide the material to maintain it with. Who is providing the 24 elements? Right? Only Krishna. 4. Special favor given to the faithful, Poshanam. Right? So if you're not faithful, then no Poshanam. 5. Impetus for activity, Utaya. Right? So that impetus should be pure devotion, not I want to wear cargo jeans. 6. Prescribed duties for law-abiding men, Manu Mantara. 7. And here's duties for law-abiding men. You don't want to be a law-abiding man. You don't have to be. Right? 7. A description of the incarnations of the Lord, Isha Anukata. 8. The winding up of the creation, Nirodha. 9. Liberation from gross and subtle material existence, Muktihi. And 10, the ultimate shelter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ashraya. Right, so everything is resting in Him. That was the previous point we're discussing. Everything's coming from Him, so the jivas are all resting in Him. In that way, there's a oneness. But because we're taking shelter of Him, there's a difference. And He has no shelter. He is shelter. The 10th item is the shelter of all the others. To distinguish this ultimate shelter from the 9 subjects, the Mahajanas have described these 9, directly or indirectly, through prayers or direct explanations. Srila Prabhupada. These verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, 2:10-1-2, list the 10 subject matters dealt with in the text of the Bhagavatam. Of these, the 10th is the substance, and the other 9 are categories derived from the substance. So we see this principle is always there. You have the main, and then what is derived from there. Srimad Bhagavatam accepts Sri Krishna as the shelter of all manifestations, because Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the ultimate source of everything, the supreme goal of all. Two different principles are to be considered herein, namely, ashraya, the object providing shelter, and ashrita, the dependence requiring shelter. The ashrita exists under the original principle, the ashraya. Can you hear?
Yes.
Okay. The first 9 categories described in the first 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, from creation to liberation, including the Purusha avatars, the incarnations, the material energy or living energy, marginal energy or living entities, and the external energy or material world, are all ashrita. Right? They're all taking shelter of the Lord. That means He's the one who's controlling them. That means they function according to what He says. The prayers of Srimad Bhagavatam, however, aim for the ashraya tattva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. The great souls expert in describing Srimad Bhagavatam have very diligently delineated the other 9 categories. So they very expertly, and they've described how everything functions. Sometimes by direct narrations, and sometimes by indirect narrations, such as stories. The real purpose of doing this is to know perfectly the absolute transcendence, Sri Krishna. I think after this class is here, to just move it, maybe put it over on the, put it on the stairs there or something. Because that makes a lot of noise. Yeah, just put them under, that's it. I got 2.5 the doors right there. Okay, thank you. That got rid of most of the noise. The prayers of Srimad Bhagavatam, however, aim for the Ashraya Tattva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. The great souls expert in describing Srimad Bhagavatam have very diligently delineated the other 9 categories, sometimes by direct narrations and sometimes by indirect narrations such as stories. The real purpose of doing this is to know perfectly the absolute transcendent Sri Krishna, for the entire creation, both material and spiritual, rests on the body of Sri Krishna. So the spiritual and the material are resting on Krishna. Krishna knows all this. Right? He's Sarvajna. He knows everything. And so, then how He defines it, then we see the acharyas are simply making it clear for us to understand. Text 93-96. To know distinctly the ultimate shelter of everything that be, I have described the other 9 categories. The cause for the appearance of these 9 is rightly called their shelter. The Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the shelter and abode of everything. All the universes rest in His body. Then a quote within this quote. The 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam reveals the 10th object, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the shelter of all surrendered souls. He is known as Sri Krishna, and he is the ultimate source of all the universes. Let me offer my obeisances unto him. Footnote 14. This quotation comes from Srila Swami's commentary on the first verse of the 10th canto, chapter 1 of Srimad Bhagavatam. One who knows the real feature of Sri Krishna and his three different energies cannot remain ignorant about him. Did it ever rain this hard when we were giving class? Have we ever had this heavy of a rain during class?
Yeah.
We have.
Yeah, we have recordings. It's really heavy.
Okay. Maybe that's the point. These ones just don't go out. Heavenly meeting. Okay, so that would also explain our previous discussion, is that the material world and knowledge about the material world would have no meaning without the Ashraya or Krishna. So if you don't know Krishna, you don't know the Ashrita. So to say we know the Ashrita without knowing the Ashraya, that won't function. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Jiva Goswami states in his Bhagavat Sandarbha 16 that by his potencies, which act in natural sequences upon the scope of the speculative human mind, the supreme transcendence, the summum bonum, eternally and simultaneously exists in four transcendental features. His personality, his impersonal effulgence, particles of his potency, the living beings, and the principal cause of all causes. The supreme whole is compared to the sun, which also exists in four features, namely the personality of the sun god, the glare of his glowing sphere, the sun rays inside the sun planet, and the sun's reflections in many other objects. The ambition to corroborate the existence of the transcendental absolute truth by limited conjectural endeavors cannot be fulfilled, because he is beyond the scope of our limited speculative mind. Oh, really? The water's coming in this way. It's impressive. In an honest search for truth, we must admit that his powers are inconceivable to our tiny brains. Right? And he's talking about the ones who speculate. Right? So those who don't, brains may be even smaller. The exploration of space has demanded the work of the greatest scientists of the world. Yet there are countless problems regarding even fundamental knowledge of the material creation that bewilder scientists who confront them. Such material knowledge is far removed from the spiritual nature, and therefore the acts and arrangements of the absolute truth are beyond all doubt inconceivable. Right? So here, even in the purport, just on this point, is that just because you have material intelligence, you can't know the Lord. It's only when you know the Lord, given as he gives himself, then you know, and he gives that through the Acharya. That was the first point. In the five principles of knowing Lord Chaitanya, I mean the six principles, the first one was the Acharya. If you don't accept that, you will not know the other five. So you will not know Lord Chaitanya as Yashraya. And you will not know anything else that is taking shelter of him. So the whole spiritual life is based on that. When you surrender to the Acharya, then you make advancement. And if you don't surrender to the Acharya, technically you have not really seriously started spiritual life. It means you're doing something. If it's bona fide, you will advance. But Krishna is only going to take you seriously when you surrender. Because that means then you have that determination. So the instruction of the spiritual master, that's the important thing. And that's the point that's being attacked. Right? They're not saying that there's some problem, you know, with other aspects. They're talking about the instruction. So that means they're not accepting the principle of the acharya. The primary potencies of the absolute truth are mentioned to be three: internal, external, and marginal. By the act of his internal potency, the personality of Godhead, in his original form, exhibits the spiritual cosmic manifestations known as the Vaikunthas, which exist eternally, even after the destruction of the material cosmic manifestation. By his marginal potency, that's another thing, is they're thinking that it's the material world is something unique. But when they say chewing the tooth, it's the same thing going on over and over and over again. To explain that a person performs activities. And let's say he performs sinful activities. Right? Just as a broad, a general example, right? It's like, sinful means you would not be following the Vedas and stuff like that. So, we're just throwing that out as a hypothetical point. Right? So, now, not following these things, they don't know what's proper and improper. By accident, a few things might be right, but generally speaking, it's not scientific. Even if it's right today, tomorrow they'll throw it out. So, then, from there, they'll go down, they'll visit Yamaraj, they'll have a nice discussion, he'll point out the reality of things, and all that, and then you'll spend some time there with some of his associates. Right? Learning, properly, a deep understanding of how you should not be doing the things that you thought were so important to do. And like all great teachers, his associates have great patience. And so they don't mind running you through these things hundreds of thousands of times, until you really understand. Even though on their part it's difficult walking all the way back up that mountain and then tossing you off again, walking all the way down, picking you up, putting you together, dragging you up again and throwing you off. They'll do that all day. Right? That's where the original, "we could do this all day," comes from, right? That's their motto, right? So, they're there and they do all that. Then, having gone through that, Then there are certain of the 8,400,000 species, there are, 8 million that correspond with the particular activity that's been done, right? So it's different than the hellish experience. Then you'll take birth in those particular animals and come up through the system until one again takes birth as human. And where will you take birth as human? In the exact same place that you committed the sinful acts and went down from. So now it's a matter of, did you learn anything? So that means those situations that we think are so new and unique and different from anything, they're always going on. It's the same stuff. So we think it's new. It's just the same stuff. The modes of nature adjust and adjust it a little bit. And then, it adjusts again and it goes back the other way. It's just like, let's say, Bach, right? He's from how long ago? Some hundreds of years, no? Like 300-400 years or something? Yeah, like that. And so now most people don't listen to the music. And it's considered, kind of old and that. But there is this new revival where they're playing Bach, but generally with electric instruments. And it's becoming very popular. It's amazing that his music works very well with electric guitars and all these kind of things. It's so technical that it makes for something very special. And so it's just hundreds of years, the modes adjust, and then people, this looks interesting. You understand? That's all it is it's just going through. The collar changes. Now you have the collar that there's not much point in the front, it's starting to go back. But before, collars were like that. They just came around. One of the things they call them Chinese collars. Like that, If you keep going, it'll get into that. And then it'll start coming back forward again, and because it's so long, they have to put a button on it. And then, that's for a while, and then they make it a little shorter, so you need no button, and they just keep coming back. You understand? It just keeps doing that. The lapel in the suit gets wider and that. The cut is more of this or that. Or, you understand, it becomes more skinny or more accommodating to one's, prosperous position. Like that. You know the what do you call it? The what are those things? Police. The police come in, they go out. You know, so it just keeps going. Buttons, they come in and out, you know, you have four buttons, you know, suit jacket, three button, two button, one button. You know, you can't do any more than that unless you're wearing a safari suit. Then you can have six buttons. Right? So is it? And that was in, I remember in seventh grade, the kids that were into fashion, they were wearing Nehru suits with a big medallion around their neck. You know? So it's, you know, it just goes through the modes of nature. Just do that. And so this idea that, no, we're something different and unique that no one else can understand, that is so much false ego. So much false ego. Okay. That's the problem. So we see here is that we're pointing it out, is that it's all coming from Krishna. And so Krishna, then he's the one that creates the illusion, he's the one that lifts the illusion, and he'll only lift it if you have devotion to the acharyas and following their instruction. Otherwise, he's not going to lift it. So, even when it says one's here, that doesn't mean you know the place. Is that okay? Yeah. By his marginal potency, the Lord expands himself as living beings who are part of him, just as the sun distributes its rays in all directions. By his external potency, the Lord manifests the material creation, just as the sun, with its rays, creates fog. Right? As if fog's that hard to understand. The material creation is but a perverse reflection of the eternal Vaikuntha nature. So if it's just a reflection, it's the same mechanics. What's perverse is that people are doing these, are following these spiritual mechanics for their own mundane purpose. That's the perversion. And generally in this argument it means, oh, the mechanics of the material world you won't understand. These mechanics come from the spiritual world. Mother Jashoda is the one who's cooking. Radharani is the one who's cooking. That's where cooking comes from. That's reflected here. Just they don't cook for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that it's the same thing. They wear clothes there, they wear clothes here. It comes from there. So this idea that this is something separate, that's illusion. These three categories of the absolute truth are described in the Vishnu Purana, where it is said that the living being is equal in quality to the internal potency, whereas the external potency is indirectly controlled by the chief cause of all causes. Maya, the illusory energy, misleads a living being as fog misleads a pedestrian by blocking off the light of the sun. So if one's in this fog, how will the Westerners know this? Because they're starting off like, we know this, you're in a fog. Right? That would be like, yeah. It's like, does it rain here? Right? Okay. But the sun comes out also. Okay, now let us go to London. So now people in London will say that people in India can't understand London because they don't live there in a constant rain and fog and, you know, no sun. You know, it's understood. It's just an unfortunate situation. So it's like, you know, it's like that stuff stuck on the bottom of your shoe when you walk in the house. You know, like that. Yeah. Although the potency of Maya is inferior in quality to the marginal potency, which consists of the living beings who are part and parcel of the Lord, it nevertheless has the power to control the living beings just as fog can block the actions of certain portions of the sun's rays, although it cannot cover the sun. It doesn't bother the sun, but it can cover our appreciation of the sun. So that's the point, is the acharyas are giving that light. So you can see that we're saying no. We're denizens of the dark, and so we know the darkness better. Right? You know. The living beings covered by the illusory energy evolve in different species of life, with bodies ranging from that of an insignificant ant to that of Brahma, the constructor of the cosmos. The pradhan, the chief cause of all causes in the impersonal vision, is none other than the Supreme Lord, whom one can see face to face in the internal potency. He takes the material. So here is that pradhan, the chief cause of all causes in the impersonal vision, is coming from Krishna. It's still Krishna. It's his potency, so it's non-different from him. He takes the material all-pervasive form by his inconceivable power. So it's him who is the material world. Although all three potencies, namely internal, external, and marginal, are essentially one in the ultimate issue, they are different in action, like electric energy, which can produce both cold and heat under different conditions. The external and marginal potencies are so called under various conditions, but in the original internal potencies there are no such conditions, nor is it possible for the conditions of the external potency to exist in the marginal or vice versa. One who is able to understand the intricacies of all these energies of the Supreme Lord can no longer remain an empiric impersonalist under the influence of a poor fund of knowledge. I think that sentence Prabhupada summed it up. Right? One who is able to understand the intricacies of all these energies of the Supreme Lord, means you're seeing him connected to Krishna, can no longer remain an empiric impersonalist, because that's what the modern academy is, under the influence of a poor fund of knowledge. Does that answer your question? Prabhupada gave the perfect conclusion there. Text 97. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna enjoys himself in six primary expansions. His two manifestations are Prabhav and Vaibhav. Srila Prabhupada. Now the author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita turns to a description of the personality of Godhead in his innumerable expansions. The Lord primarily expands himself in two categories, namely Prabhava and Vaibhava. The Prabhava forms are fully potent, like Sri Krishna, and Vaibhava forms are partially potent. The Prabhava forms are manifested in relation with potencies, but the Vaibhava forms are manifested in relation with excellences. The potent Prabhava manifestations are of two varieties, temporary and eternal. The Mohini, Hamsa, and Shukla forms are manifested only temporary, in terms of a particular age, right? You'll just see them at a particular time, then you won't see them. Because, right? Like, Mohini performs her pastimes at a certain time, but we know that she's in the pradhan aspect of the covering in the universe, that's where she's residing, and that's where she's being worshipped. Right? Among other Prabhavas, who are not very famous according to the material estimation, are Dhanvantari, Rishabha, Vyas, Dattatreya, and Kapila, right? According to material estimation, they'll say they're not very. Among the Vaibhava Prakash forms, so Vaibhava, what you say, is an excellence, are Kurma, Matsya, Nar Narayan, Varaha, Hayagriva, Krishnagarbha, Baladev, Yajna, Vibhu, Satyasena, Hari, Vaikunta, Ajita, Vamana, Sarvabhoma, Rishabha, Vishrakshena, Dharmasetu, Sudhama, Yogeshwara, and Brihadbhanu. 98. His incarnations are of two kinds, namely partial and empowered. There's some particular excellence, or there's some particular potency. Like what did we mention? Mohini, Hamsa, and Shukla. So Mohini is that aspect of being able to cover. Right, she was manifesting that potency, you know. So even Lord Shiva, even though he's Purusha and he's beyond the material, still he may be beyond the material control, but it's not that he can't be controlled by Krishna. Does that make sense? Well, then the others are excellences. So then we see a certain excellence that Kurma has, or Matsya, or Narayan. Does that make sense? So an excellence will be. They're manifesting a particular, let's say, like, you know, some special activity or some knowledge or something like that. Yes, that's what he's saying. They're not very, no other Prabhavas. Because they're doing something very special. Vyasadeva is the potency of being able to write. Things like that. Among the Vaibhava, Prakashwana, Kurma Matsya, because Kurma does something special, holding up the mountain, doing some special opulence. Matsya then saving the Vedas and things like that. The others are manifesting a particular potency. You have the potency itself, so it's more about the potency than what's happening. The other one is about the excellence of the manifestation. But it's based on the potency. It's just which aspect you're taking. You know, it'd be just like somebody makes some arrangements. You can look at how technically nice the arrangements are, or you can check about the mood. They're both together. But it's just one is emphasizing one's emphasizing the other. Does that make sense? Because one will be, wow, look at that, and oh, so nice. It's the same thing. It's just different flavors. That's the thing, they're very subtle. Yes?
If you think of Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada says that vaibhava, he defines it with another word, emotional form.
Emotional form.
So okay. Emotions are different there.
Okay. Yes, that's right. So, like that. There's a difference. Subtle, but different. His incarnations are of two kinds. Namely, partial and empowered. He appears in two ages, childhood and boyhood. Ooh. Yeah, because TLC mentions this also.
Yeah.
So this is coming from Sanatana Goswami.
Yeah.
Instruction. Srila Prabhupada. The Vilas forms are six in number. Incarnations are of two varieties, namely Shakyavesha, empowered, and Amshavesha, partial. These incarnations also come within the category of Prabhav and Vaibhav manifestations. Childhood and boyhood are two special features of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. But his permanent feature is his eternal form as an adolescent youth. Right, so he has these different things. So the childhood pastimes you'll see. He does, but his eternal form, that original form, will be that is the eternal adolescent, the Kaishora. Yes.
He's called Krishna Paramatma.
Yes.
And then we say Prabhav and Vaibhav. In the childhood, what this will be? Childhood.
They'll be, it means they can be within these. Because you see, is that it means the Sringadeva doesn't exactly have a childhood.
That,
yeah, but it just means this himself, then as one of the forms, then he can have it in childhood, he can have these different manifestations, as he says, they can be in both. These incarnations all come with the category of Prabhav and Vaibhav. And so the ages can have both.
So can we say technically, because he's original, he's boyhood, so that would be part of us. And when he comes for the child, I mean, when he manifests for the child, that would be either Prabhav or Vaibhav.
It might be. It means we'll have to see. Is that like that? The question is that when Krishna means Krishna is, if you're taking that the original form, the eternal form is that of an adolescent youth. So if you have the boyhood and these kind of things like that, would those fall into the categories of the Prabhav and Vaibhav? Or would that be...
Yes. Actually, there is another categorization. First is the Swayam.
Yes.
Swayam, and then the second one is Tadekatma Rupa.
Yes.
And the third one is Avesha.
Yes. Then you start with those. And then within each of those, you have these. Because the Prakash, the Prabhava and Vaibhava, you're going to have in all of those.
So the Swayam Rupa is the Taittara form of Krishna.
Yes.
That is the. And then there is Swayam Prakash. And within that Swayam Prakash, there is Prabhava and Vaibhava, in which Prabhava is like Krishna manifesting as many thousands of forms for Rasa dance.
Okay.
And Krishna manifesting as Balaram with different emotions, and then other like emotions, like in when the Rasa Leela is those four-handed form, that goes in Vaibhava, but that is Swayam Krishna.
Yes.
Then when Sadekatma Rupa is, then all the Vaikuntha expansions and all of them, the four forms of Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Ariruddha, they form as a Prabhav, which are potencies.
Okay.
And Vaibhava goes all the other Vaikuntha planets.
All the other planets. All the other 24. I mean all the other 20.
And even the Mahanarayana himself also, with a different emotion there.
Okay, so they're all Vaibhav.
Yeah.
And then the Chakravyuha is Prabhav.
Yeah. This is within the Sadekatma, then this is the Vilasa aspect. Within the Sadekatma, this is the Vilasa aspect of Lord. Then there is Swamsha, Amsha aspect. Vilasa means they have full potential, Amsha means they have partial.
Okay.
And within the Amsha, then the Prabhava is the Purushavatara.
Okay.
And the Vaibhava is all these mentioned. All those incarnations with which Lord comes into the material world.
Okay.
And then...
And Leela avatars, they're...
Leela avatars also form into the Vaibhava.
Also in the Vaibhava. Okay.
Also, they can be from Vilasa. Some of the Leela avatars can be from the Vilasa aspect directly manifested.
Okay.
Here, the categorization is whether it is partial or the full personality.
Okay.
Like that. But here, it is like according to the moods and other things.
Moods, yeah. Here, it's talking about moods and the others are the potency. Because generally, when you say swamsa, that means there's less potency manifested than who they're expanding from. So that's why Prabhupada always says plenary portion or portion of plenary portion. So that will mean then you're getting down to the swamsa aspect. And then you said the last one, Avesha.
Avesha. And then within the Avesha also there are empowered incarnations and the vibhuti. Like Bhruti Muni is a vibhuti, others are vibhuti.
Okay.
Empowered incarnations like Vyasa we can consider.
Yeah, Vyasa, Prithu.
Prithu like
that. Like that, yeah. So they're taking a major potency, so they're counted like the Supreme Lord. Like Prithu, even though he's a jiva, he's counted as like the Lord, because he's manifesting that potency as the Lord. But then, then Bhrigu, then he just has a particular quality, and then he's known as the great sage, the Brahma.
Bhagavad Gita, we discussed that among the sages and
the... So, thing is, that will come up later in the conversations, no?
This comes up only, all the details comes up only in the Sanatana Goswami.
Yes, in Madhya Lila, it'll be. So this is that, as you're saying, it's just kind of like you're touching on these things so we have an understanding, so we'll appreciate them later. You know, as Jiva Goswami is doing in the Tattva Siddhanta, and then it'll be explained later.
Krishna Siddhanta.
Krishna Siddhanta. Yeah. Yeah. Krishna Siddhanta, that's his purpose, no?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's Krama Sandhava. Okay. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
The personality of Godhead Shri Krishna, who is eternally an adolescent, is the primeval Lord, the source of all incarnations. He expands himself in these six categories of forms to establish his supremacy throughout the universe. In these six kinds of forms, there are innumerable varieties. Although they are many, they are all one. There's no difference between them. Because it's all Krishna, it's just which part he's bringing out to do a certain thing. Does that make sense? You know, just be like, you're one person, but you're going to pick something up. So if it's like a pencil, you just, you know, use, you know, two fingers like that. If something heavy, you use your hand. It's more than that, you use both hands. More than that, then you got to get your back into it, you know, like that. So it's just a matter of how much you're manifesting. So depending on the pastimes, the devotees, the mood of the devotees, what's there, then all these aspects are there. So what's being established here is that all of these are all Krishna, and he's just expanding and then making everything, all the, you know, wonderful things happen. So, Srila Prabhupada. The personality of Godhead manifests himself in six different features. 1. Prabhav. 2. Vaibhav. 3. Empowered incarnations. 4. Partial incarnations. 5. Childhood. And 6. Boyhood. So these six features are there. Then you have the category of 3, whether it's Swayam. No, Swayam? Yeah, Swayam, Kadekatma Rupa, or Adesha. And so these all will fall also within those. Right? You know, so it's just, you have different categories of ways how you're going to approach. But all these different aspects will be there. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, whose permanent feature is adolescence, enjoys his transcendental proclivities by performing pastimes in these six forms. In these six features, there are unlimited divisions of the personality of Godhead's forms, right? So you're giving that these are the categories, but then there'll be mixes of these and mixes of those for very specific. Because if one is there, that's where the difficulty comes, is we want to be able to put them into these boxes. But you can only put them into the form to get an understanding that any of these can be combined together. Is that makes sense? In these six features, there are unlimited divisions of the personality of Godhead's forms. The jivas, or living beings, are differentiated parts and parcels of Lord. They are all diversities of the one without a second, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 101-103. The Chit-Shakti, which is also called Sarupa-Shakti, or Antaranga-Shakti, displays many varied manifestations. It sustains the kingdom of God and its paraphernalia. The external energy, called Maya-Shakti, is the cause of innumerable universes with varied material potencies. The marginal potency, which is between these two, consists of the numberless living beings. These are the three principal energies, which have unlimited categories and subdivisions. Srila Prabhupada. The internal potency of the Lord, which is called Chit-Shakti, or Antaranga Shakti, exhibits variegatedness in the transcendental Vaikuntha cosmos. Besides ourselves, there are unlimited numbers of liberated living beings who associate with the personality of Godhead in his innumerable features. The material cosmos displays the external energy in which the conditioned living beings are provided all liberty to go back to the personality of Godhead after leaving the material tabernacle. So, as mentioned before, is the internal, the Sarup Shakti. But then generally the Sarup Shakti, Chit Shakti, Antaranga Shakti, when you say Sarup, you're talking about the display as the internal potency. The Sarup means it also contains the Bahiranga and the Tathasta energies. But the manifestation of those in the form that we're aware of them in this material phenomena and the jivas here that are conditioned, then that goes on here. In, like Prabhupada says, in particular condition. Because in the spiritual world, there's no need of that manifestation. So in the spiritual world, the Chit Shakti, even though it contains all the other two, is only is manifesting in the spiritual position. Okay. Next verses. These are the principal manifestations and expansions of the personality of Godhead and his three energies. They are all emanations from Sri Krishna, the transcendence. They have their existence in him. Although the three Purushas are the shelter of all the universes, Lord Krishna is the original source of the Purushas. Thus, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the original primeval Lord, the source of all other expansions. All the revealed scriptures accept Sri Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the supreme controller. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. Footnote 15. This is the first verse of the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita, 5.1. You know all the conclusions of the scriptures very well. You create these logical arguments just to agitate me. Who is saying this?
This is
This is a continuous Brahma? No.
Sagraj Goswami presented the antithesis of somebody saying that Krishna is an aspect of Vishnu. Now
Okay. So he says, you know all the conclusions of the scripture. You create these logical arguments just to upset me, agitate. Yeah, okay. So hopefully you can say that about the previous discussion. Srila Prabhupada. A learned man who has thoroughly studied the scriptures cannot hesitate to accept Sri Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If such a man argues about this matter, certainly he must be doing so to agitate the minds of his opponents. Yeah. Otherwise life gets boring, right? Okay. Verses 109. The same Lord Krishna, the fountainhead of all incarnations, is known as the son of the king of Vraja. He has descended personally as Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is the supreme absolute truth. To call him Kirodakshay Vishnu does not add to his glory. But such words from the lips of a sincere devotee cannot be false. All possibilities abide in him, for he is the primeval Lord. All other incarnations are situated in potential form in the original body of the primeval Lord. Thus, according to one's opinion, one may address him as any of one of the incarnations. You can't. He has his original form, and he's the source of all these others. So you can, according to your position or your understanding, address him in these ways. It's not wrong, but it doesn't mean that his original form is not the source of that form that you're interested in. Srila Prabhupada. It is not contradictory for a devotee to call the Supreme Lord by any one of the various names of his plenary expansions, because the original personality of Godhead includes all such categories. Since the plenary expansions exist within the original person, one may call him by any of these names, right? Because you see, when Krishna comes, all the incarnations then reside in him, right? And then when he goes back, then, you know, they all manifest in their particular forms. In the Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhya 695, Lord Chaitanya says, quote, I was lying asleep in the ocean of milk, but I was awakened by the call of Nag, Sri Advaita Prabhu. Here the Lord refers to his form as Kirudakshay Vishnu. Because Advaita Charya will be the original sound, so that's Nag. You know, because he is the Karana Dakshay Vishnu. And so from him, all the elements are expanding and all that. So that principle of how everything functions is coming from him. So he is not. So in this way, he's just having some fun in referring to that.
This
shloka
number 105 is although the three purushas are the shelter of all the universe, that is three Vishnu?
Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Kirudakshay. It means the whole universes are taking shelter in them, but they're taking shelter in Krishna. That's the point. <clears throat> 113. Some say that Sri Krishna is directly Naranarayan. Others say he is directly Vamana. Some say that Krishna is the incarnation of Kirudakshay Vishnu. None of these statements is impossible. Each is as correct as the others. Srila Prabhupada. The Lagu Bhagavatamrita 5.383 states, quote, according to the intimate relationships between Sri Krishna, the primeval Lord, and his devotees, the Puranas describe him by various names. Sometimes he is called Narayana, sometimes Upendra, Vamana, the younger brother of Indra, king of heaven, and sometimes Kirudakshay Vishnu. Sometimes he is called the thousand-hooded Sesha Naga, and sometimes the Lord of Vaikuntha. So it depends on the devotees and their vision and things like that. But it's pointed out, there is the original source. So it's not wrong because he is all of them. And they are simply him in that particular manifestation. So there is no difference. But at the same time, there's a mood difference. So the devotee is attracted by the mood. Prema means it's a particular mood. Right? 115. Some call him Hari or the Narayan of the transcendental world. Everything is possible in Krishna, for he is the primeval Lord. I offer my obeisances under the feet of all who hear or read this discourse. Kindly hear with attention the conclusion of all these statements. Srila Prabhupada. Prostrating himself at the feet of his readers, the author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita entreats them in all humility to hear with rapt attention these conclusive arguments regarding the absolute truth. One should not fail to hear such arguments, for only by such knowledge can one perfectly know Krishna. 117. A sincere student should not neglect the discussion of such conclusions, considering them controversial. For such discussions strengthen the mind. Thus one's mind becomes attached to Sri Krishna. Srila Prabhupada. There are many students who, in spite of reading the Bhagavad Gita, misunderstand Krishna because of imperfect knowledge and conclude him to be an ordinary historical personality. This one must not do. One should be particularly careful to understand the truth about Krishna. If, because of laziness, one does not come to know Krishna conclusively, one will be misguided about the cult of devotion, like those who declare themselves advanced devotees and imitate the transcendental symptoms sometimes observed in liberated souls. Although the use of thoughts and arguments is a most suitable process for inducing an uninitiated person to become a devotee, neophytes in devotional service must always alertly understand Krishna through the vision of the revealed scriptures, the bona fide devotees, and the spiritual master. Right, so in other words, you'll use logic and argument in the beginning to convince somebody about Krishna consciousness, because that's the only context that they have to function from. But having taken up the process, to think that that's going to be how it's going to work, then that is neophytes in devotion must always alertly understand Krishna through the vision of the revealed scriptures, the bona fide devotees, and the spiritual master. Unless one hears about Sri Krishna from such authorities, one cannot make advancement in devotion to Sri Krishna. So to then lean on the authority of the speculative path, one won't advance in devotion, one won't know Krishna. The revealed scriptures mention 9 means of attaining devotional service, of which the first and foremost is hearing from authority. The seed of devotion cannot sprout unless watered by the process of hearing and chanting. One should submissively receive the transcendental message from spiritually advanced sources and chant the very same messages for one's own benefit as well as the benefit of one's audience. Yes, submissively receive, right? Spiritually advanced sources and chant the same message for one's own benefit and for others. Like the speculative process is only good to make people aware of Krishna consciousness, right? We'll use logic and explain it logically, right? We have so many nice, examples. It's like, okay, we say we're not the body, but if someone's saying they're the body, but then if you say this is my hand, so who does it belong to? I bet you could say that about everything. My forearm, my elbow, my upper arm, my shoulder. You can say that. So who does it belong to? So we're using that logic. But to understand Krishna, it has to be that it's about the scriptures, not based on logic. Right? Not that the scriptures aren't logical. It's just that it's not the authority of logic that gives them their standing. It's the authority coming from those who are on the transcendental platform. Okay. From the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami, Madhya Lila 22:65, we learn, quote, "A person who is expert in understanding the conclusion of the revealed scriptures and who fully surrenders to the cause of the Lord is actually able to deliver others from the clutches of material existence." End quote. Yeah. So if we're talking about the movement being about getting out of the material world, you have to hear from those who have this understanding and who have surrendered to the Lord. They can actually deliver. There's no mundane knowledge or position that can deliver you from the material world. It means the example is given. You can't wash your hands of blood with blood. It's not going to work. Srila Rupa Goswami in his Upadeshamrita 3 advises that to make rapid advancement in the cult of devotional service, one should be very active and should persevere in executing the duties specifically in the revealed scriptures and confirmed by the spiritual master. Accepting the path of liberated souls and the association of pure devotees enriches such activities. Imitation devotees who wish to advertise themselves as elevated Vaishnavas and who therefore imitate the previous acharyas but do not follow them in principle are condemned, in the words of Srimad Bhagavatam 3.3.24, as stone-hearted. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has commented on their stone-hearted condition as follows: Bahir Ashru Pulakayo Sator Api Yad Dridhayam Na Vikriyeta Tad Asma Sharam Iti Kaniska Dikarinam Eva Ashru Pulakadi Matve Pi Asma Shara Hridaya Hridayataya nindaisa, those who shed tears by practice, but whose hearts have not changed, are to be known as stone-hearted devotees of the lowest grade. Their imitation crying, induced by artificial practice, is always condemned. End quote. Right, so that's on that side, the sahajiyas. And we've already before dealt with the scholars and speculators. The desired change of the heart referred to above is visible. Is visible in the reluctance to do anything not congenial to the devotional way. Yeah, so you want to do things always what's good for devotional service. Right? That's the standard, not what's good for me. To create such a change of heart, conclusive discussion about Sri Krishna and his potencies is absolutely necessary. Right? Otherwise you think that these potencies aren't under Krishna's control. False devotees may think that simply shedding tears will lead one to the transcendental plane, even if one has not had a factual change in heart. But such practice is useless if there is no transcendental realization. False devotees lacking the conclusion of transcendental knowledge think that artificially shedding tears will deliver them. Similarly, other false devotees think that by studying books of the previous acharyas is unadvisable, like studying dry empiric philosophies. Right, because what he's talking here, this section, he's talking about these technical points of Krishna and his energies and his expansion. But Srila Jiva Goswami, following the previous acharyas, has inculcated the conclusions of the scriptures in the six theses called the Such Sandarbhas. False devotees who have very little knowledge of such conclusions fail to achieve pure devotion for want of zeal in accepting the favorable directions for devotional service given by self-realized devotees. Such false devotees are like impersonalists who also consider devotional service no better than ordinary fruitive actions. Does that make sense? So that's the principle. So that's what we're trying to avoid. You have the razor's edge in the middle, and then you have these two mentalities on the two sides. And as you take it out, it becomes very much more obvious and everything like that. And as you bring it in, then it's more light. But the principle is we're trying to avoid these two. So we're basing everything on the acharyas, that even the technical stuff that's important, it purifies the heart, it gives an understanding, it shows Krishna's position, our position, like that. Otherwise, then yeah, all these, those who are not in the proper position, they throw these out.
This shloka number 114, it says that none of these statements is impossible, but since it is as correct as the other, the people completely
confused. Yeah. Means because it's all Krishna, so therefore to say call Krishna by that aspect is not wrong. It's just like, okay, let's say you have a lady, okay, and so then she's married, she has children, right, and yeah, like that, okay. She also has siblings. Right? She also has her parents have siblings. So it's one person. So is it wrong to call her a wife? Is it wrong to call her a sister? Is it wrong to call her a daughter? Is it wrong to call her a mother? Or what about a niece? What about an aunt? Right? They're all correct. So that's the whole point, is that since all these expansions are all coming from Krishna and are Krishna, to call Krishna by any of these names is not wrong. Because he is those. But at the same time, as it's being pointed out, there is the original form that all these, he's the fountainhead of all these forms. So to call him by this is not wrong. But at the same time, as there is the original.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Vrindavan ki